This week on the show, Heat Magazine called Carl a genius. Auntie Nora puts valances around absolutely everything, what Carl can't get in London, and Ricky cancels Rockbusters for the first time. All that and more is coming up in this week's edition of the Carly Pilk Boys. If you'd like to support the show, patreon.com/Carly Pilk Boys. You get the show a week early. You'll never encounter any ads. And we've got the Brady Brett Boys up there. We recapped series 2 of The Office. Go check it out, patreon.com/Carly Pilk Boys. Okay, enjoy. Welcome to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
We're two little Aussie radio fellas air checking the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows. I've listened heaps. This is Zach's first time. We're up to series 2, episode 13, broadcast on November 16, 2002. Zach, do you have a Heat Magazine style headline for this episode?
Is this for the last time we hear radio genius Carl Pilkington's Rockbusters?
We'll have to wait and see. Yeah, it only took 5 weeks for Rockbusters to be cancelled by Ricky.
And I've got to admit, this week I'm with Ricky.
Yeah.
It was previously I was like, oh, no, man, I understand you're doing a thing of like, oh, let's cancel it, or like there's a bit of banter in that. But I'm like, yeah, no, yeah, that was a stretch.
That was ridiculous. Yeah, in previous weeks I've said, wait. Because he starts to take more liberties and the cryptic clues become more craptic, as Steve likes to say. I thought Carl's gone full tilt this week. He had two planned jokes, both of them puns.
Outside of... Oh, you mean, what was the one?
The Hattitude, and there was another one that we'll get to later in the air check.
Yeah, the Hattitude one took me a while. Did you, like, because I didn't know, I thought he said heart, not hat. Like, sometimes when you combine the accents with the recording, with the fact that I'm listening in a car, like,
you know, your baby's sleeping.
Yeah, it's not, like, sometimes I miss things. And so, like, I was like, the heart he chewed. I'm like, what are you? I was like, oh, hat, right.
It's a joke. We'll get to the air check in a sec. It's we're recording this sort of the day it comes out. It's just after Easter. Zach, would you like a little egg?
Yeah, I'll have an egg. Thank you. I know these are name brand, which is great. Not the
Cadbury, and we've got a crunchy one in there.
Not the usual kind of nondescript ones I'm used to from my grandparents. Did you get those?
Oh, what? So they were just covered in sort of red or blue foil. There were no.
Yeah, and they were disgusting.
Yeah,
but I still ate them, obviously.
Of course,
they really had the mantra that quantity over quality. So I'd get a big bowl.
I'd appreciate that as a child.
I remember I lost some, right? I had a big bowl of them, and I used to hide them. I don't know. I was like a squirrel or something. I was like putting them away, and they had like a sauna in their house. They had this like 80s style house. Yeah, it was weird.
A sauna in their house, oh, part of the structure of the house,
like kind of
like an outhouse style.
Yeah, it was kind of like an outhousey thing, which is maybe that's in cooler climates, that's a normal thing. Very strange where we live.
I know in Denmark, it's very like every house has a sauna.
Anyway, whatever. I lost my eggs, and then like months had passed. I went back to grandma's house. I was in the sauna one day playing, like I always did. There they were under one of the seats. My bowl of eggs. 3 months later.
Wow,
what a bounty!
A congealed pool of.
Well, I
crap
imagine
chocolate.
That's probably what squirrels do. You know, they're probably hiding away all their nuts, and they probably forget where they are, and they probably come across a tree one day and be like, oh, look at all my nuts. This is great.
Dogs too, with bones.
Yeah.
Did you eat the bowl of melted
course.
Eggs?
Yeah, of course.
I did. So we went skiing a couple of times when I was a kid as a family. And I grew up in Perth, so not a lot of snow over there. So we packed away the ski gear for a long time. And then once I was going through my stuff many years later, found my ski jacket, reached in the pocket and found half a chocolate bar that I'd forgotten about.
Bonus.
And I was about 11 or 12 at this point. I tried to eat it.
How was
I'm
it?
I'm surprised I'm still here today. It had been years. It was a chomp. Remember Chomp?
Yeah, I love Chomps.
It was not good. No, even at my that stage, where now I have like free access to chocolate whenever I want. Mm. I was thinking about this over the Easter weekend. It's like, why do kids care about? Well, not thinking that. It's like, oh, chocolate isn't as valuable to me anymore because I can have it whenever I want.
That's right.
But it was real valuable currency. Like if I was given chocolate, or my nan would give me a little bowl of Smarties, I had to like guard them and ration them out.
And you'd come up with a plan. It's like your resource management now.
Yeah.
It's but like, what am I going to do with these? Do I trade them? Do I eat one a day? Do I just scoff them down?
Yeah, that's what I would do. And then I would cry because my brother still had some and I would say they got more than me. But yeah, so no, even at that stage when it was like, well, this is chocolate. This is like gold. I don't care if it's 5 years old. I've got to try it. And it was not edible whatsoever. But so how was your weekend? We've had like a Good Friday and Easter Monday off the back of that. Oh, sorry. You had a tragedy over the weekend. Sorry.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Sorry.
It's all right. I was going to pretend that it was, I was like, oh, what did I do on the weekend? Oh, that's right. I put down my dog. It wasn't a great weekend, if I'm completely honest.
Okay, fair. Okay, understandable. Is Peaches old enough to understand the concept of, like, do you do Easter egg hunts with her?
We did.
Easter bilby.
We, like, throw out, we had these, like, wooden eggs.
Fetch!
And she goes and fetches them. She loves it. She, like, picks them up and puts them in a basket. But, no, she has no concept of,
right.
Of
what's it's going the day on. Of the day that you get lots of chocolate.
And they know, you know, she goes to daycare a few days a week and they, you know, you kind of pick up, it's like, what are they teaching them? Because she has like, so they obviously have spoken about Easter and they know that rabbits hop because we have like Easter egg, like Easter bunny ears and we put them on her and she suddenly just starts like bouncing around the room and we're like, where did you learn that? I don't think it's inherent. Like, I don't think there's anything about the ears that give her special powers. So, like, the daycare must be saying, like, you know, they must be doing that.
Yeah.
Like, bunnies hop or something.
Yeah. Really enforcing the Easter bunny myth from an early age. Yeah, sorry for your loss. Yeah, you're one of your greyhounds.
Yeah, thanks. It was hard, yeah.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Hello. I, on the other hand, was in. I was with my girlfriend's family, who run a bowling center in Bundaberg.
Oh, really?
Good Friday, they closed the bowling center. It's called Bundy Bowl and Leisure, so it's not just bowling; it's leisure.
Is that like? Is there an arcade component?
There's an arcade. There's dodgems. There's escape rooms.
Dodgems.
Yes. There's a giant slide. They're opening shuffleboard.
Oh.
This sounds
amazing.
Yeah, so Good Friday, they closed the center, partly because it was Good Friday, partly because all the COVID, everyone, you know, they're struggling to get staff.
Hmm.
We went there and had the place to ourselves.
Incredible.
Can you imagine?
I can't.
It's a
childhood dream.
It really was. Like, this must have been what it was like when Michael Jackson would go in, like, have places shut down so he can
It reminds me of Richie Rich. Did you ever watch that as a kid? And he had his own McDonald's.
Absolutely.
And he had his own bowling alley.
We walked in. Brooke's dad turned on the light, flicked on the lights. It was like, we were doing, in the arcade, they have the basketball thing, like shooting. We were playing basketball in the whole arcade, like trying to get past each other and then go lay up a shot.
Amazing.
We bowled, obviously. We did a lot of shuffleboard. And Brooke, her dad and me drove around in the dodgems playing dodgeball.
Oh, that's amazing.
In the dodgems.
That's the only issue is if you guys are there by yourself, who's going to jump on the back of the dodgem and get you out of the corner when you get stuck?
Yeah, that was
like, even as a kid, I felt like that was humiliating.
It was like getting the RAC. It's humiliating. Get the tow truck. And it's actually just a 15-year-old kid. But yeah, it was incredible. The phone was ringing the entire time because apparently the local community were shocked and outraged because they close one day a year, Christmas Day.
Mm.
So for them to close on Good Friday, not a normal thing. First time they've done it, I think they said in like 15 years.
So it was like a staffing issue, was it?
Yeah, it was part of that. Yeah, yeah. Like COVID is going everywhere and so a lot of people are staying home. So it was a combination of things. Like her parents need to take, like, they don't give themselves enough time off either. But so they did close it. And so on their day off, we went, let's go back to the bowl. So it was fantastic fun.
Is that, you know, when you, everything becomes a job, no matter how fun your job is. Do you think Brooke's dad in the Dodgems was like, he has the same feeling as like someone doing like a paper route or like a delivery driver?
Here we go again. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how much, like, they're very busy. So I don't think he doesn't gets get on that the much. Dodgems. He doesn't get on the Dodgems as much as he would like to.
I love the idea of a guy who got into it for a love of Dodgems.
Yeah.
and just at 6 a.m. before it opens every morning, just takes it for a solo spin. Or it just goes, like a stressful lunchtime, and it's just like
puts, oh, I need to unwind.
He puts the sign on the door, back in 15 minutes.
Just doing hot laps.
I just needed to go for a cruise in the Dodgems. Yeah. This always gets me in a good mood.
He set up witches' hats for us to like go through like a time trial sort of thing.
And you know how like when a middle-aged man gets a hot rod kind of cruiser car, and then him and his missus go out, and the missus has like the handkerchief over the head
that comes off in the wind.
Yeah, they're just like cruising around the Dodgems with that.
Yeah, his version of a midlife crisis is he gets a sports car Dodge. We don't have the money for this. Leave me alone. Yeah, that was great fun.
They were my favorite Dodgem cars, because I was always a little, as I said when I pissed my pants on the chairlift, which I did. I say that on this podcast.
That was on the mailbag, which is out in the world.
Okay, yeah, great. I never loved like the real, like Dodgems were a good mix of like exhilarating, but like I'm not going to piss my pants. Because I didn't like, when I was a teenager, I liked the upside down ones and stuff. But when I was like, you know, 10, I was not into the scary ones. Everything had to go
through the will it make me piss my pants filter.
Yeah. And Dodgems were great. Right in the happy medium.
So quite different weekends then.
Yeah.
I dressed up as the Easter Bunny as well. I
saw that. What was that about?
Brooke's family run a bowling center, so they're into fun and games.
Yeah.
Unlike my family, which are into drinking alone.
Okay.
So they have this running sort of prank rivalry with a house down the street. So they made me dress up as the Easter Bunny.
Is this like an 80s college film?
Maybe. Yeah. It's a little bit like Porky's or... So they made me dress up as the Easter Bunny to go and steal a letterbox.
Oh, that's fun.
And they filmed it as like a ransom video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were they into it?
The neighbors? Yes, they did. They sent a very funny message about, like, because it was Saturday night that they wrote a very funny message about like, oh, we're so honored that the Easter Bunny on the busiest night of the year would take time out to threaten our family and steal our letterbox.
That sounds like a fun neighborhood.
Yeah. Let's get on to the air check. So series 2, episode 13 came out, was broadcast November 16, 2002. In break one, Heat Magazine is called Carl a genius.
Mm. His celebrity is growing. Is it? Like they're referencing the article that's like a year ago, aren't they?
No.
Remember? Or is this just come out, the one that you have?
No. The one that I have... Doesn't call him a genius. It says the
review of them when they're... I thought...
No, I actually have it within reaching distance.
Okay, here we go. It's always next to the mics. I thought... I didn't know this was a new reference. I just thought it was strange. I'm like, why are they referencing an article that's 6 months old?
I reckon they're in the magazine a lot in that radio section. Probably. And this week they've used the word genius. Maybe I don't have it.
I thought it was interesting with that, right? When I heard that they called him Radio Genius, and we've discussed before that the journalist who was writing these reviews probably didn't really listen to the show. And how much can you say about a radio show? So you're going to say he's a radio genius. But I thought, for whatever it's worth, in the decades that pass and you lose the audio, or you lose any people who were around at the time, right? And so what do? You look towards printed media for context. I'm like, is this going to build this kind of myth of like Carl Bilkington? Like when they're teaching media classes in 2100 and they're talking about the early 2000s radio, are they like, well, there was this pioneer, this radio genius, Carl Pilkington? Do you know what I mean? Because the only reference they have articles calling him a genius.
Well, no, but luckily we have all the audio, and in this episode we have Carl saying things like they were a bit demicky, they weren't properly, which makes zero sense, sort of undercuts the genius part.
No, but see, but there's no context to that. See, but this is context. This is outside of the recordings. These are people making comments on it, so-called radio commentators. And so this is our point of view, is our point of reference, is that people were calling him a genius. Do you get what I mean?
You've lost me.
Okay, never mind.
I also think Carl is a bit of a genius, though.
I do think.
In a way. Einstein's mum thought he was mental as a child, part of Carl's genius. Was to summarize it like that.
I don't know if that's true either, by the way.
You don't think so?
Hasn't that been like, you know, the idea that he failed math? Wasn't that like debunked? And it was like, no, he was always really good at math.
Yeah, it's like the story of like, oh, you know, Michael Jordan wasn't chosen for his high school or college team or whatever. And it's like, no, he was always.
Yeah, because he was representing the country at the time. He was probably playing like under 12s for America.
Carl's auntie puts valances around everything. Classic eccentric relative material. And we get another recap of the Fighting for 5 minutes story. Do you have like eccentric relatives?
Not to like the extent that, you know, like no. I think like within the context of a family, someone is always going to be more eccentric than others. But
yeah.
Like not like an all time. They can't compete in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Like they can do the local league. But they're not going to state.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. In the small pond of the family, sure. But if they went to an inter-school, inter-family carnival event and everyone put forward their eccentric
relatives. As an adult, though, I've also thought like, oh, hang on. Do they think that we're the eccentric ones? I have had that thought recently. I'm like, because no one thinks that they're the ones that the other families are talking about being weirdos.
Interesting. Yeah.
But then I thought, as you said that, I'm like, no, we don't really. Hang on. Is my family the weirdos? I don't think so.
Think so?
I think they're pretty straight.
Your dad was an NRL ref.
That's right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess that's not eccentric.
It's not eccentric. It's notable though. Like I've told Brooke that because her family are big NRL fans. And I've been like, you know, Zach's dad used to like ref grand finals.
Yeah, it's funny because he stopped doing that when I was fairly young, like 12 or something. But like I see clips now. People share like famous moments in
famous ref fuck ups.
No. Just like highlights of like rugby league.
Yeah.
And you just see that in the background. Or like sometimes if it's like the referee was involved with it, like sending him off or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's my dad.
Yeah.
It's like I didn't really understand the context when you're a kid because that's just what you're used to.
And he was a ref during like, you know, people always say bring back the Biff.
That was when I most recently saw him, what I'm talking about. I saw a clip online yesterday of a famous fight and he's like in the middle of it blowing the whistle. Being like, get off each other, stop. Stop.
Yeah.
But they were like really, it was quite 20 years ago. It was like street fighting.
Yeah, like, stuff that would happen during games. In the AFL as well, like stuff that would happen during games that just you'd get kicked out of the sport now.
You'd be banned for life now if you did what they did 20 years ago.
It's all out street brawls.
Full on
punching each other in the face.
Yeah. And this is what 6-year-old kids going, yeah, get him.
Yeah. There was a thing like the Western Derby, Eagles versus Dockers. There was one, I think it was the year 2000, and it's referenced as the Demolition Derby because there was like a bench clearing brawl that broke out. And yeah, as kids, you're like, get him, yes, violence. In break two, Ricky went north for a corporate gig at Old Trafford. Steve makes a joke about the only cab being horse-drawn in Manchester. You know, Manchester, I looked it up, is less than a 4-hour drive away from London.
It's amazing how
the regional differences in England. And that's because it is such an old country. Like it used to be that there was a king in the north, like Game of Thrones, but just like it's 321 kilometers away. That I will drive that on a weekend to go to a beach.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too because you'd cross a lot of borders and stuff, and people have pointed out interestingly in Australia westernization and European influence means that like we've lost a lot of the indigenous history.
Just
but like there were 200 plus, I'm sorry if that's wrong, indigenous nations.
Yes.
You know, so yeah. Like when we travel, we used to, yeah, we are crossing a lot of indigenous country.
Yes, we are.
But I did read like a letter recently from a European who was early in Australia, and they caught like a train from like Brisbane to Sydney or something. And they're like, the landscape is like pretty much the same the whole way. Mm-hmm. And though like other people were saying, like, they're like, I spoke to like the conductor and he said that we went the bland way. There's a more interesting way to go or something. But I was like, oh yeah, there is like 1,000 kilometers and you'll see the same trees.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas like, I wonder in Europe if that's, I don't think that's the same. I think you do.
Worth over 1,000 kilometers. That's things like, would change it up. Yeah. Yeah. There's 1,000, you can go 1,000 kilometers and never encounter a hill
in Australia.
You could just,
well, that's probably, to be fair, that's what the train would be doing. Like they're going to avoid the mountains, yeah, which is where you're going to get different trees.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to purposely go up a mountain in a train if you don't have to.
Yeah.
So they're going to be going over the flattest area. And so therefore I start to think like, well, yeah, it's pretty similar conditions. You're going to see similar trees. If you went 1,000 kilometers inland, you're going to see different trees. Like if you've just gone up the coast, it's pretty similar.
Well, from Brisbane to Bundaberg is quite different.
Oh,
the earth is very red.
Yeah, okay, in Bundaberg. There you go.
And I was thinking about it compared to driving through New South Wales, where you got the blue mountains.
Yeah,
and
well, it's there much you go. I guess it just depends. It just depends
in a different kind of way.
I got one of those books of like collections of people's letters. Like I was interested to like, I was like, man, Australia must have been, when Europeans first got there, they must have been like, what the hell is this? Like, yeah. Can you imagine seeing a kangaroo? Like, that would be like, where am I?
And then you
they're
find
like
out.
They're like 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
Muscly as anything. And they bounce. Like, what other animal does that?
You're telling me information that I know, but you are pointing out how ridiculous. Kangaroos are fucking ridiculous.
They're weird, man.
And they've got a big like hoodie pocket at the front of their belly.
Yeah.
That they won't let you ride in.
And no matter if how you much approached you them, like the big red kangaroos, they would like, they'd be like, come on, let's go. Like they would like
kick
destroy your
head
you.
Off. Yeah. Yeah. Carl outlines his issue with London here.
Yeah. You know, if you're a panini in a latte or whatever, you can't move from. But for soil, I had to go virtually how many miles away from me to carry that soil home and stuff.
Outrageous.
You can't.
London needs this. Bunnings.
That was one of my favorite riffs is when they start going, you can't get good mulch in London. Of course you can't, because no one's got need
yards
for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why would they? Like, you're not just going to have a big compost center when everyone's in apartments.
In the center of London particularly, because Carl says repeatedly that he lives on a high street, so that's like, you know, the busiest part of whatever
he
in
seems
central
genuinely
London.
Genuinely confused by this photo.
Yeah. In break three, they get back onto Rick Waller and Carl tells an actual joke.
They get rid of him next week because of his attitude. And first time I read it, I thought he'd actually ate someone's hat.
Good from you, Carl. He even does the radio cliche there, the can I go home? Did you hear that?
Yeah.
You know, when someone tells, like, oh, you can go home now. You've earned, you know, you've done your work
the
for the
George
day.
George Costanza going out on top.
Yeah. In break four, they get onto Carl's school picture, the only one his dad paid for because he was so stingy about paying for school photos. So he only got the one. Have you seen it?
No. Do you have it there?
It's online. Hang on.
I related to this, to be honest. We never got school pictures for whatever reason. I don't know if it was stinginess or there was four kids in my family, so maybe it was expensive to times it by four. But did you get school pictures?
Okay, a few, yeah. Not every year, but I've definitely, there's a few different hairstyles working their way through.
Also,
that I'm like, oh, that's year five, that's year four.
I also loved his description of his dad saying that the picture of the kid wasn't enough. I want a background as well.
Here you
give
go.
Me a landscape.
Have a look at this. That's what when Steve references his weird little smile.
No.
Cute kid.
He's a nice looking kid.
Yeah.
He's not a weird kid at all.
No. But that is a strange smile.
It's a heavy vignette as well. Is that the...
I think that's...
Someone's edited that
themselves?
Yeah,
I think so.
Or is that... of the time.
Well, there's some photos of that's a Photoshop. Some photos of Ricky. There you go. There's Ricky as a kid with a monkey. Anyway.
That ages Ricky quite a lot, doesn't it? That childhood photo.
It's black and white.
It's like, yeah. Oh, okay. What era was this?
People wearing top hats. So, Carly's asked when was the last time he felt happy. Like when did he didn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders?
Because I don't sleep like I did, like when I was a kid. I had really good sleeps, and now I don't.
Right.
So I think.
But you've got a lot of things on your mind. You know, where can I buy soil?
Yeah. How can I confuse a computer by tapping in Y in the search engine? Yeah.
Probably when I was 14, I was stress-free.
Uh-huh. Were you?
Yeah.
When was the paper round?
Probably when I was 15.
Right. That's when it started, was it?
I reckon. That's when I started getting stressed. Mm.
I think that's fair enough. That's a fair assessment. I started pushing trolleys when I was 13. That's when, you know, I had to start.
And was that stressful?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a trolley boy.
I was a trolley boy, yeah.
I've always wondered about the camaraderie between the trolley people. Like, did you work by yourself? Or
no,
were
I was
other
solo.
People?
Yeah, oh, it was solo. An after school job. Yeah. I'd go and do it and I had to clear the car park basically before I was done.
Was it Coles, Philo, Woolworths? Yeah. A combination.
Yep, it was at a place called Heathridge, I think. It was just one of those crap suburban. There's a supermarket and a chemist and a bakery and a bottle shop.
You ever hit a car?
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened?
Just get moving.
Did you?
Yeah, I have no specific memory. I do have a specific memory of one day going like, well, it's nearly time for me to go. There's still trolleys everywhere. Oh, just leave it. And then the next day, trolleys were everywhere and demolished. And I got seriously yelled at about that.
And it's funny how, like, I don't know what personality you were, but I would have taken that, like, that would have stressed me out.
Hugely, yeah.
Yeah, it's like I've let down the team.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, oh, God. It was one of those adolescent testing your boundaries things.
Yeah,
like,
true.
Let's see what happens if I just go home a little early. And it's like, oh, the worst thing happened. I shouldn't do that. I should finish putting all these trolleys away. And you had to lock them up a certain way. And
I told you about how I used to drive golf carts around the retirement village, right?
Think so?
Yeah, I told you about this.
Tell me again.
That was my high school job. After I left, I was a checkout person, which I left.
Yeah.
And I went to do this. It was like a retirement village. Everyone's in their own little villa. It's like a small suburb.
You've told me you caddied.
No, I used to caddy for my dad when I was like 10. But this is like, they had built a wheelie bin trailer that went on the back of a golf buggy. And like we'd go around, we'd pull the bins into this thing and would pull them down to a ring road because the little roads were too small for like a big truck to come through and pick up these things and then we'd take them back. But like there was like the guy who ran the center was like this older guy near retirement. He wanted to give some jobs to some 15-year-old kids and like the job took an hour, but he's like, the state says that I have to pay you for three. So you get paid for 3 hours. You can leave as soon as you've done though. And so we got so fast. We could do it in 40 minutes sometimes. Me and this other guy from my school, we did it together. A new guy came in, a new manager, much younger. I'm going to get this place into shape kind of thing. Uh-huh. And I remember people whispering to us, things are going to change around here. Things are going to change. I remember the first time we saw him, he was walking out to his car. He's got like briefcase in hand. He's got like his tie on. We come flying down the hill in this golf cart. My friend's in the driver's seat. I'm in the back, like, with a one of those big pool sticks that you clean out a pool with, and we put like a brush on the end of it, and we were driving past the street lights,
knocking them out.
No, decobwebbing them, but we were doing it on the fly. So like he would drive past, and I would like swipe at it, and like without slowing down, and then he would fly out onto the road, and I was like grabbing the edge of this like trailer. It was like dodge 'em cars.
That's fine.
And I just remember looking up and seeing him, and he kind of like his jaw dropping. I was like, uh-oh, things are gonna change.
Yeah.
And after that, we would get a long list of jobs we had to do until the 3 hours were up. And it was all he was doing was making us work the time he was paying us.
Yes.
But we were so angry about it.
Yeah.
And it was like, this is the worst job in the world.
Yeah,
because we have
total
a certain
injustice
expectation, and yeah. then it wasn't met. And so one of the jobs is we had to clean up the woodworking center. They had a woodworking center for like
nice.
The old people to go and do some woodwork, and it hadn't been cleaned up in years. And so honestly, it would have been 10 centimeters of sawdust around the whole thing. So we shut all the doors, put goggles on, and I went in there with a leaf blower. And I just went like, whoa! It was like a snow globe of like sawdust and most probably has done damage to my lungs, I'd imagine.
Right.
No mask, nothing, just like, whoa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I don't know what the plan was because it all just settled again. Like we didn't suck it up. I was just like, oh, we'll just blow it around.
At least into a little pile in the corner yeah. or just...
Well, not man, it was a small room and that was a powerful leaf blower. Uh-huh. Like it was just like a cyclone in there.
So that was your first job?
Second job, yeah. It was the best job.
Oh, sorry. Man. Yeah, check it out.
It was That's, the best
yeah,
job.
Yeah, yeah.
We were like by ourselves. Like what Carl says, by yourself.
You're your own boss.
You're your own boss. They gave us golf buggies. We were like 14. We That's were like flying around.
Excellent. I was excited to push a trolley.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I could jump on the back and ride it.
And funnily enough, this trailer that we had, because we spent so much time in this thing, to this day, I can still reverse a trailer pretty well because of like it was a smaller version. It was like the perfect – we would like fly it through. Because you know, when you're a kid, all you have is time to practice things. I was thinking about this recently. You know when like they have like a 14-year-old skateboarder that can – that doesn't impress me at all. Because when you're 14, that's all you have to do is skateboarding. You're going to get pretty good.
Yeah.
We could like reverse through like cones – with this trailer. Like we were so good at reversing it. And yeah, it's like to this day, that's a skill I still have from it.
Nice one. Where were we up to in the show? We were up to, so that's, yeah. So wait, but that sort of goes against what Carl was saying was so you were 14, 15 and
he had his paper
around. That job, when did you have a job that put the weight on your shoulders, the weight of the world on your shoulders?
Yeah, when this new manager came. That's okay. when we had, yeah, that's right, when it was stressful right. now.
They touch on how depressing Sunday afternoon evenings were growing up,
yeah,
pre-internet. I relate to that as well, but just how crazy. Those days are gone because of Netflix. Like the idea like
that you would connect that feeling to programming.
What's on TV and go, that means. Like I always had that with weekday morning TV, which I wasn't really allowed to watch, but Cheese TV was on.
Yeah.
And then after it finished, What's in the Box, like the real preschool stuff.
Yeah.
And that song still triggers me in a way because it was time to go to school.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm probably associating it with to go outside because I only watched it on holidays.
It would be fun though to go play on the trampoline.
Yeah, yeah. See, I don't have the negative.
No, because it was always around 8:30. I was like, I got to go. Damn it. Carl's mum cut his hair, tells the story how he ended up with a bowl cut, classic stuff like that. My mum cut my hair. She was always very good at it though.
Yeah.
Like better than hairdressers. So no. Well, I did have bowl cuts, but it was intentional.
Yeah, that was the fashion
at the time. That was the fashion at the time. Break 5, educating Ricky. Albino buying one of them, hippopotamus and chicken, you believe it. Yeah, so the second pun joke. Was when Carl says, and he flew off the trampoline at a hypotenuse, which sort of works.
What I don't understand is that a triangle joke? It is.
It is, right?
That's what, like, you know, the long
side of a... Yeah, the hypotenuse of a triangle, yes.
The long I suddenly side of a right-handed...
got insecure of it. Yeah, it's the longer side of a right triangle, yes.
Yeah.
It's the hypotenuse.
Like the A squared plus B squared equals C squared, right? Pythagoras theorem.
Yep.
Yep.
Chemistry.
Sure.
Algebra.
Photos.com.
Stigmata. Pelican Brief. Ricky and Steve take issue with the concept of hippos being in a circus. Here's a story from Reuters, quite legitimate, from 2016. From Russia. 3 10-year-old hippopotamuses, Zlat, Yana and Ada, are the main attraction at a Russian family circus where they roll over, play ball and stack their bodies on each other. Their handler, Tofik Akhnovdov, said the hippopotamus show is unique and the tricks the hippos perform cannot be seen anywhere else. I wonder why. I just want to say that this is the only show of its kind in the whole world, said Akhnovdov, who's worked with hippos since 1979. The hippos came from... an Israeli safari park. They were aggressive initially, but are now used to performing, he added. Well, they've been beaten into submission.
I'm glad that generally the world is moving away from that.
From animals in circuses, full
stop.
Doing
tricks, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially big, wild animals.
Oh, yeah. Although it would be cool to see someone with a chair and a whip in a cage with a lion.
Get in a cage with a wild lion.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, we'll see how it goes.
Break Six Rockbusters. Steve is giving away his copy of Pelican Brief. I don't know if I've asked this. Have you ever, it is again a bit of a radio trope, bit of a cliche. They're like, oh, I'm giving away something that belongs to me.
Mm.
I think I've asked you this before.
Never done it.
The answer was no.
Yeah. I have a vague memory of something that we did, but I can't remember it. Of like having to tell someone on a phone afterwards, you know, we're not actually going to send it to you. It was like a gag. It was like, you know, we're giving away Dom's whatever it was. But it was like the joke was that no one would want it.
Yeah.
And so I remember the producer being like, yeah, he got it. It was fine. Like he didn't want it. Like, you know, we were afraid that it would get off air and the person would be like, so when are you sending it to me?
Yeah.
You know, like no. When Bart.
I want my elephant.
Yeah. Which is actually pretty, thinking about it now, that's pretty good. Parody of radio, isn't it? That Simpsons episode where they're doing like the elephant or the money.
Or 10 grand, yeah. The unmarried lady is a friend I eat out with might be the worst Rockbusters clue of all time.
I struggled with all of these.
Even Madonna. I love that woman. I love everything she does.
Mad on her. Madonna.
Mad on her.
Isn't that what it was?
Yeah.
Well...
I don't know. I thought just Madonna, because Madonna means like.
Like. What? I thought it was a pun, mad on her. I'm mad on her.
I think it is. But I thought it was like literally the meaning of Madonna, which is an idealized, virtuous, and beautiful woman.
Oh,
so right. It's like, oh, Madonna. She's a Madonna. But mad on her makes perfect sense as well. You've broken my brain, Zach.
That was why Ricky liked it. That's why he gave it to him. He said, yeah, you can have that one.
Wow.
But he didn't like the other two because they were way too much of a stretch.
I've heard it so many times.
I don't think I came. I think they say it. I think they say mad on her in the episode.
I must have just tuned out every time it got to that part. So Break 7, Educating Ricky Part 2. They talk about the Book of 50 Freaks. That's the book that Ross Noble gave to him that Ross told me about when I had a chat with him. Chicken, You Believe It, the story about the headless chicken. And Carl's got a date for this one, 1945. And it is, as is established in the telling, it is a true story. Check this out from the BBC. The chicken that lived for 18 months without a head. There's a photo and everything. Pretty grotesque. There's its head.
Oh, my goodness.
That's horrifying, isn't it? It's actually a big hole. I might post it to Instagram, but
that kind of you might get that Instagram might have a problem with that. The fact that they've put it up on that pedestal and put the head next to it, like the fact that they've styled this photo
because it's got a little cloth over the little podium that it's standing on.
It makes me very uncomfortable. Also, the idea that they intentionally kept the head. Like, it doesn't look like that head has been freshly removed. That's been there for a while.
Yeah, and its eyes are open. 70 years ago, a farmer beheaded a chicken in Colorado and it refused to die. Mike, as the bird became known, survived for 18 months and became famous. But how did he live without a head for so long? Asks the author of this article. And it's quite long.
So the idea is, like, it looks like the head was removed. And so, therefore, you kind of conclude its vital organs. But maybe in the chicken, is really only half its head's been removed.
Yeah.
And I guess like the vital parts were in the part that was still on the chicken.
Miracle Mike, here's an ad for it. Miracle Mike, the headless chicken. I listened and heard the farmer say, we'll have this fowl for lunch today. Thought I, there won't be nothing doing. I just can't see myself a stewing. But he took the axe and chopped off my head, then threw me down and left me for dead. There on the ground for a moment I lay, then I arose and walked away. So they wrote a poem.
What is this? Is this an ad for it that's a poem?
Copyright 1945, but so it's a poem written from the perspective of the headless chicken.
Right, okay.
Said the farmer.
It inspired art.
Yes, something good came out of
it. Someone was like, that chicken is my muse. I'm compelled to write some prose.
There's two more paragraphs. Said the farmer Lloyd to his kindly wife, that's the strangest thing I've seen in my life. Said the kindly wife to her farmer man, I can't put him in the frying pan. A fowl that hates so much to die, there must be some good reason why. And since he wants so much to live, every living chance to him will give. Through my esophagus they feed me corn. They give me drink and keep me warm. I'm well and happy as can be. I stand around for folks to see. Although I haven't got a head, I'm better off than if I'm dead.
I love some rhyming couplets that also share some information. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
a biographical.
Yeah. And it's like, you'll be wondering, how is it fed? Well, read the poem. We cover it.
It's got all the vital information. Oh my God, there's a statue of Mike.
What city is this in?
Colorado, somewhere in Colorado. Wow, this BBC reporter really went deep on this. This is a full feature.
Well, it is something everyone's heard of, right?
The chicken that lived without a head?
Well, you know, I feel like that was a part of, I don't know, I never heard where from, but you know, that was something that was passed around in the schoolyard. There was a chicken that, or chickens, it wasn't even about a specific chicken. It was that chickens can live for a long period of time without heads.
So can cockroaches. In break 8, Ricky was mistaken for another UK radio legend.
And there was a woman that worked there, and she sort of, I could see her sort of looking at me, and she said, and then she came and said, are you off the telly? And I went, yeah. She went, yeah, Chris Moyles. Oh, beautiful.
Just enjoy that. Well, got nothing really to say about it.
Johnny Vegas was the other one.
Yeah,
well, wasn't it?
Yeah. They get on to educating Ricky, albino by one of them, but they get distracted by a whole different story about the man getting a new arm put on that just keeps growing. Carl believes it. Break 9, Rockbusters answers. Elastica, Miss Dynamite, Miss Dinamate, and Madonna, mad on her. Ricky cancels, in reaction to how terrible they are, Ricky cancels Rockbusters for the first time.
Right, that's the end of that feature, until you can get ones that work. Okay, so you won't hear any more of that, because it's rubbish. You're running out already. Do you just think of the first three things that come in your mind and make them fit? Just think of three bands and make a clue, and if it fits, it fits. If it doesn't, it doesn't matter.
I just went through again.
Rubbish. It was rubbish.
Whatever. I think this is an important turning point as well, because Ricky is starting to get angry at Carl. Which hasn't
true.
Really this sort of outward hostility, you know, amongst friends. They're like, rubbish. That's rubbish. That is starting to emerge. I'm listening out for the first time he calls him an idiot.
Well, I wonder if a shift has been. We've been charting the shift between like, it was like Carl and Steve used to bring all the content and, sorry, not Carl and Steve. Ricky and Steve would bring all the content and Carl would chip in. It's almost the other way now. They even reference in this episode that the big things coming up are educating Ricky and Rockbusters, which are Carl's contributions. So now Carl has some responsibility to the show. And see, before, Ricky can't really get upset at him because it's not his show. He's like, well, you're just chipping in. You're the panel operator. You're the producer. It's not your fault. It's my show.
Right.
But now he's kind of trusting him with his name.
They're bestowing some responsibility
on
him.
It's called the Ricky Gervais Show.
Yeah.
But you have to come in and bring a contribution, and now he's kind of upset at what he's brought.
And also, this is like right before or right after, I think it might be the day before, the following week following episode 6 of The Office has gone on TV.
Yeah,
so people are probably really hot on Ricky and going, oh my God, he does a radio show. They tune in and hear that. They hear Miss Dinamate.
And I don't think in that respect, I think it's a bit of bluster for the show, And so, like, I don't think he's genuine. I think there's an essence that he doesn't think it's very good.
Mm.
But, like, I don't think he's genuinely upset or he thinks that it should go. But a part of it also is like, okay, sometimes when you get stuck in these things on radio, someone just has to take a perspective. And sometimes when things aren't really going very well, the best thing to do is for one person to point that out.
Mm.
you know, because that kind of creates a dynamic. Diffuses,
yeah.
And also shows the audience, right? What he is doing in a way is like, if the audience thinks this is awful or that it doesn't make sense, and they're going, do these other blokes think that it's good? Mm. And it's kind of going, we're with you. Mm. That wasn't good. Mm. Or we think that didn't make sense either. Because otherwise, if they go, yeah, good work, Carl, the audience is going like, sure. Hang on, are all these people thinking that this is a good idea?
Yeah. Well, as Steve said in that interview that I played a clip of, it's like, well, it was both things. We knew that Carl was special and we enjoyed him. And it was also rubbish.
Yeah.
But that was sort of what made it special. So episode 8 is when Rockbusters reached its final form. This is episode 13. And it's the first time it's being cancelled. So it only lasted 5 shows.
I assume it's not cancelled, right? It goes on.
It becomes the running joke that it's cancelled.
And does it last the run of the show?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Into the podcast.
Oh, okay.
So a long time. But I'm looking forward to, I was thinking that like, okay, they're doing Educating Ricky, they're doing Rockbusters. We need Monkey News to start.
That's the most famous one. That one,
yeah.
I've heard of that segment and I've never listened to the show.
And from memory.
And Carl's Diary, is that one as well?
That's in the podcast. Okay. And from memory, I think we don't hear White Fan Carl anymore.
Yeah.
Except for a few exceptions. In break 10, White Elephant, the White Elephant story, the albino buying one of them, and Carl makes zero sense here.
If you have a lot of something, you also have a lot of demic ones, don't you?
A lot of what?
You know, sort of demicky ones, ones that aren't right, really.
Demicky?
Well, you know, like, they weren't properly. They weren't properly?
Sorry, Carl! What are you doing?
English is his native language.
Well, is that... I thought maybe that was a regional reference.
Mate, well, just saying demic is just like obviously a slang. I think it's probably like, you know, quite offensive.
Okay. It was gibberish. Like yeah. I didn't understand the words.
But just like saying, you know, they're not properly.
Isn't that an English term? I'm not feeling properly. Don't you say that if you're feeling sick? I'm sure I've heard that on TV shows.
Not feeling properly.
Something like that.
Maybe. Let us know, curlypoopboyspod@gmail.com. Comment on the Patreon.
This was a stretch, hey. Like, yeah. You didn't feel like that. That didn't seem like that's where that comes from.
Well, and Ricky, I think, sums up this entire show, this entire episode in reaction to the albino story.
I feel like I haven't been educated. I feel like I've lost something. So that time in my life that I can never get back. I feel like I've sort of been soiled and I don't know where to start. I'm angry.
And on that note, I think we'll end the episode. What was your favourite bits?
The Ricky and Steve riff around that you can't get good mulch in London.
Yeah, yeah, I'll sign off on that one.
Okay, cool.
Next week, Series 2, Episode 14, Carl's potential big break from MTV. MTV really? Have been in touch and they say they want to screen test Carl. So we hear about that.
I wonder if he goes through with it, I'd be interested to see that footage.
Carl interviews, well, we might be able to hear the footage.
Okay.
Carl interviews someone for the first time, a woman who had a supernatural experience. It's one of the parts of the episode, like when he interviews people about animals, I always just skip through it whenever I'm just listening to these episodes. Oh. So I'm interested to actually sit through it next week.
Here's an immediate question. Do they play it in a chunk? So yes. There's like 4 minutes of him interviewing. They do.
Yeah.
See, I'm wondering whether it would be more engaging because the interesting thing is Ricky's reaction. If they just played it in kind of 30-second chunks and then got Ricky to comment on it.
See, that's what a good content director would tell them because that is a downside. It's just like the show for me stops for those couple of minutes and then they react off the back. But yeah, that's what the show is at its best when Carl is speaking and they're jumping in with their... Mm. Quick wit. And Carl's mum has submitted her own Rockbusters clues.
Love it.
So we hear those. And heaps more. Next week on the show, patreon.com/CarlyPilkBoys. Thanks for supporting the show. If you're on the Patreon, just $2 a month. Get the show a week early. And we'll have a new series of the Bready Brett Boys starting next week. Are you okay to sign off and we'll do series 1 of Idiot Abroad?
Sure.
Once a fortnight.
There's like 8 episodes or something, isn't there?
I think so, yeah. Contact us, carlypiltboyspod@gmail.com, Instagram, carly.piltboys, Zach Mander on Instagram and TikTok. And I'm David Ferrier Cartoon. Zach, see you next time.
Bye.
Rubbish. Whatever. It was rubbish.
Whatever.